Hello and welcome to Walt Love Podcasting. On today's episode, we're going to be discussing the overall expansions that recently opened at Walt Disney World, most recently being Toy Story Land, and then the year previous, Pandora, the World of Avatar, discussing what made either successful, unsuccessful, what worked, what didn't, and some interesting points along the way that we feel are, well, interesting. This is Brett Schmoofy on Twitter, along with
Josh, easywww.com, a great site, and Mike with blogmickey.com.
So Toy Story Land opened up last year in 2018, June 30th, 2018 to be exact, bringing about two new attractions. You have Alien Swirling Saucers, you have Slinky Dog Dash, a new entrance to Toy Story Midway Mania, or I guess it's just called Toy Story Mania at this point. They dropped the Midway a while ago. So we got two new attractions. We have that boosting up the studio's attendance. But according to your numbers, Josh, wait times are down across the board at studios.
Yeah, it is interesting. You would think with a new land, you would be increasing attendance. That's why they built Toy Story Land. Increase attendance. Unless it is just a stopgap before Star Wars. But year over year, wait times are down at almost all Hollywood Studios attractions, including Toy Story Mania.
So it's interesting to note that even though studios technically added attractions, wait times are down. Even these attractions, since they opened up last year, Slinky Dog Dash, as well as Alien Swirling Saucers, the wait times have gone down exponentially since opening. They kind of have evened out already with the park and have found their place with the rest of the park's atmosphere and attractions and lineup.
Is it fair to say because wait times are down at Tower of Terror that overall attendance is down, or are those people just going and spending their day or their time in queue for Slinky Dog Dash or Alien Swirling Saucers? Like, would we expect to see wait times up at, like, so if we're going to talk about Pandora, would we expect to see wait times up at Dinosaur after Pandora opens, or would we expect all those people to be waiting in the queue for the Pandora rides?
Well, at Animal Kingdom, wait times have gone up about 30% since Pandora opened at non-Pandora rides. At Hollywood Studios, they're down between 15 and 20%, depending on the time of year and the attractions we're talking about, as well as the fact that Slinky Dog's wait also averages about 85 minutes compared to 200 minutes at Flight of Passage, with similar capacities, about 1,500 riders per hour, I would say.
It's averaging 200 at Flight of Passage?
Right now, Flight of Passage is 158 minutes.
Yeah, much more significant than Slinky Dog.
Right.
So we would expect typically to see waits up across the park with the introduction of a successful land, you would think.
You would certainly think so.
That's what we saw with Pandora, and Pandora by all measures is successful.
Pandora is interesting because, I mean, there's like, what, four people in the world that have an emotional connection to the Avatar movie? I am not one of them. I don't think any of us really care. But Disney took such an unlikable and very forgettable movie and turned it into something amazing that works in a theme park environment. Like, who would have thought that this, of all the franchises that they could have built something with, that this would work?
But it made so much money at the box office.
But it made it internationally. It didn't make it domestically.
It made it domestically.
Domestically, it's up
the
too,
number
right?
two movie of all time.
Behind what?
At Star Wars, Episode 7.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. Domestically, yeah.
But yeah. It pulled 600 plus thousand or million dollars. Yeah, thousand. 600 plus million dollars domestically. And then it pulled out the rest of that 1.1 billion out.
Well, the rest of the world is 20 times larger. Well, could you say that Avatar is a non-intellectual IP? People want, they know they're going to Pandora. They know they're going to Avatar. But the fact, it's like Splash Mountain. Splash Mountain is an intellectual property, but nobody's that familiar with it. They still love it.
So people are separating, in your thought, people are separating the movie from the land itself?
People love Flight of Passage, not because it's Avatar.
It'd be just as great of an attraction if it was themed to How to Train Your Dragon.
disagree. But if they made up, if they made up a whole separate thing, if it was some other random aliens, if there wasn't the movie behind it,
so it could just be it just instead of the Na'vi, it could be some other.
Yeah, it could be the Bavi. But I do not understand Pandora, because you have Animal Kingdom, which was Walt Disney World's least popular theme park. You add Avatar, which is the world's least popular, most popular movie. And somehow, attendance was up just between 2017 and 2018. It was up 2.5 million or something. And Pandora was only open the second half of the year.
Are you putting all that 2.5 million into the second half of the year? That much of a bump?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Or maybe 2 million.
I'm curious to see the numbers of repeated months now that it's been open over a year, because word of mouth gets out, and word of mouth is much more important to the average consumer than a company telling them that their product is great. Sure. Yeah. Awesome. Disney says that their new land is wonderful. Come see it. But until your friend comes and sees it and says, no, they're not joking. It's pretty awesome. You got to go see this. I think word of mouth is working and spreading to get people to come visit Pandora, because even my parents themselves were very cautious. Like, we don't care about Pandora. Why would Disney do this? Who cares? And then it opened and I said, it's awesome. You got to see it. And they saw it and they're like, wow, this is impressive. This is crazy. How is this the thing? So I think people are very skeptical and not believing that it would be this amazing creation. And now word of mouth is getting out and it's just snowballing. So people are coming.
So is that not happening for Toy Story then? If Pandora is this huge success, is it not? Have we not given Toy Story enough time?
I think it might be the opposite reaction with Toy Story.
Toy Story Land, right?
With Toy Story Land, yeah. Is everybody, because Disney is like, again, our product is great. Come see it. You have people that are coming here to see it and they're reporting back saying it's an outdoor roller coaster and a whip attraction.
Well, and the experience isn't great either, right? Standing in an exterior queue, right? Most of the time that you're standing in that line will be spent along the perimeter of the roller coaster and not inside. Well, I guess maybe not most of the time, but a significant amount of the time will be spent outside of the actual queue. That's not fun. Then you've got meet and greets where you're going to have to stand out in the hot summer sun or hot winter sun as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not fun. So you're there for 40 minutes and then you go over to the whip attraction and it's a fun ride. It's a really fun ride. If you wait 15 minutes, I think for every 10 minutes that you wait, it exponentially decreases in, you know, how much fun you have.
Well, I wonder, everybody who comes to Disney World is going to Magic Kingdom.
Yep.
Almost everybody that comes to Disney World is going to go to Epcot, at least maybe 5 years ago. And maybe there is a question, maybe it is an either or an or when it comes to Hollywood Studios or Animal Kingdom. And at the moment, that's swaying towards Animal Kingdom.
Because I think that, again, going back to what Brett said about word of mouth, is the word of mouth is you have to do Pandora. You have to
see it. This is the coolest thing you will ever see. I never saw the movie. Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. Word of mouth is spreading and people want to see what their friends saw, what their colleagues saw, what their coworkers saw.
So is it the land that gets that great word of mouth, or is it Flight of Passage specifically?
It's Flight of Passage.
Yeah, because I don't think that anybody's going to sit here and argue that Slinky Dog is less fun, I guess, than River Journey. I don't see River Journey playing a big part in this equation. It's just Flight of Passage.
That's fair, and potentially the land itself.
Seeing it, yeah. The vistas of the floating mountains over top of you is pretty amazing. The first time I remember the first time that I experienced it, I walked in there, and this is after photographing it from the air and from the ground for years beforehand. Seeing and feeling the mountains over top of you the first time that you walk into the land is an experience.
It's overwhelming.
It is. It's overwhelming. It's an experience unlike anything else at Walt Disney World, certainly Animal Kingdom. And you don't have that feeling when you walk into Toy Story Land. Seeing a giant, you know, Woody figure or a giant Buzz or a giant Rex, it doesn't give you that same feeling.
Especially one that's talking to me without its mouth moving.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as authentic as Pandora. And of course, I think that it can be widely accepted that they tried more with Pandora.
Well, absolutely. Pandora needed to be that good to pull people in. And Toy Story is just it's just a filler. It's just a stopgap.
What's crazy about
Star Wars is all they need.
What's crazy about Toy Story is that it's this kids area that doesn't actually allow kids of all ages to enjoy it. So it's...
Yeah, no, two of the three attractions, two new brand new attractions, Alien Swirling Saucers and Slinky Dog Dash, they both have height requirements.
And that'll keep, what, like up to maybe 4 years old can't ride? The same could be said for Flight of Passage. Flight of Passage has a height restriction, so they can't ride that one. They can ride Navi River Journey. There's no height restriction there, so...
But there may be less of an expectation that they would be able to ride. If you told me you're building two new Toy Story Land attractions, arguably a kids movie for kids, Avatar obviously has no demographic, despite selling $600 million worth of tickets.
So Flight of Passage has a 44-inch height requirement. Slinky Dog Dash has 38. And Alien Swirling Saucers has 32.
They're not significant. I think the problem is that if you're your standard family, two parents, two kids, one parent, two kids, two parents, three kids, what have you, potentially one of those kids is going to be 3 or 4 years younger than the others. So you might have a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old, but you also have a 3-year-old, and that is a big issue when you're trying to figure out what to do with your day, because you don't want to have to split up. And if you do split up in Toy Story Land, there isn't anything for them to do, because, you know, a 3-year-old isn't going to enjoy Toy Story Mania that much, and they're not going to want to wait in a line for an hour to wait Woody and Jesse, and they're potentially not even going to know what's going on. So I'm not sure what you would do other than, I guess, potentially a Navi River Journey and It's a Small World, a Dumbo. Why didn't they just put in a spinner, of course? So I'm not sure. The obvious answer is that they didn't need to go hard on Toy Story Land because they're going hard on Galaxy's Edge.
And we're pretty confident that there's going to be height requirements on both of those attractions for Galaxy's Edge.
Right? Certainly, yeah. So if your child can't enjoy Toy Story Land, what else can they enjoy in Hollywood Studios? They aren't doing Rock and Roller Coaster. They aren't doing Tower of Terror. They aren't doing, if height requirements are the issue, they aren't doing Star Tours. So why even go to Hollywood Studios in the first place, right? And perhaps that's the rationale. But then again, what's your kid going to do at Animal Kingdom that's going to draw in the crowds that we saw at Animal Kingdom? Or are people saying, you know, it doesn't matter, we'll throw them on the safari or something like that, we'll have fun that way, but I need to get into the front gate to be able to experience Pandora?
Well, Animal Kingdom is a special beast because even before Pandora opened, it was considered the second child-friendliest park. You have Festival of the Lion King, you have Kilimanjaro Safaris, you have the two animal trails.
Nemo.
You have Nemo, you have Triceratops Spin, a bunch of character meet and greets, It's Tough to Be a Bug. You have all these things that the kids would enjoy, which is far more than Epcot ever provided, besides the KidCot stations, which, to be honest, who cares?
Well, as the narrative goes, when these theme park lands are tremendously successful, it's because there is a creative mind pushing them. Wizarding World had J.K. Rowling. Cars Land had Lasseter. Pandora had James Cameron. Toy Story Land doesn't have anybody pushing that.
I personally feel, so the Avatar announcement was 2011. The Wizarding World first expansion, Hogsmeade at Islands of Adventure, opened up the year before, June 18th, 2010. So less than a year, or a little bit after a year afterwards, obviously Disney was feeling the pressure and was like, hey, we're still a thing, please come back and visit us, because we're going to do something with Avatar. And everybody laughed and laughed and laughed.
Well, I haven't laughed since 2011, actually. So that's true.
2011 is a long lead time for something that opened in 2017, right? 6 years?
With the Disney time schedule? I don't think so. I think that that's right along the lines when Disney would start trying to develop something, maybe a bit after they start development. Clearly, we're hearing about things like Toy Story Land. We heard about in 2015. It opened in 2018. Clearly, that was in development since before that. It wasn't just a, hey, we're working on this. No, they had full concept art and the attractions already panned out, and they were ready to roll. They knew what they were doing. So these things take a lot longer than you expect. I think the Pandora announcement, the Avatar work with Lightstorm Entertainment, was basically started at that time, which is why this timeline seemed to take forever.
Yeah, so looking at some of the timeline, it looks like apparently James Cameron was approached in early 2011, and then late in September 2011, they made the announcement of Pandora coming. So it seems like it was very early on in the development. So I guess the whole timeline thing may be thrown out the window there. It may have taken them 6 years to do Pandora, just like it took them 6 years behind the scenes to do Toy Story.
And look at the overall end result of both. Well, I guess when then you have a driving force, like you said, Josh, James Cameron's out there driving the force and making sure that corners aren't cut, that budget's not cut, that items are being done properly. And you have Toy Story Land out here, which his entire goal is to supplement the park space for the time being until Star Wars opens.
If we're looking for a figurehead on Star Wars, it's mostly the Lucasfilm group as a whole, right? So they're working, the way that they've touted that is that they're working directly with Imagineers to create this place in not only space, but also in story and a timeline where everything fits together with the Star Wars narrative as a whole.
They have plans for all of this that's not just the land. I mean, there's been graphic novels released, there's comic books, there's other art and stuff that's going on about Batu and Galaxy's Edge, and it correlates directly into, we saw a timeline with the new Millennium Falcon book that came out, that this correlates directly into the Star Wars universe and time frame. Like, this has direct impact on the universe, this time and place and being. It's something out there. Unlike Star Tours, which is this ambiguous best of Star Wars scenes attraction, this has real meaning and real consequences in the actual timeline of the Star Wars galaxy. Potentially the Skywalker name and timeline, too.
Well, speaking of timelines, it's potentially worth pointing out that with Avatar, with Pandora, nothing panned out for Cameron. Like, we're already supposed to have Avatar 2 and Avatar 3. And it would make a fantastic book to know what was going on in the background if Cameron was using Disney to try to get funding to make his new movies. If Avatar 2 was supposed to open with Pandora, if this was all supposed to be a very different thing, it has worked out, at least as far as Pandora at Animal Kingdom. But you wonder if it's going to work out for the franchise as a whole with Avatar 2 opening in 2 years, maybe?
The future. Sometime. There's nothing within Pandora, the world of Avatar, that would necessarily drive an Avatar 2 movie, right? There's nothing in the land itself.
There is nothing that goes back to those movies, period. You don't meet any of the characters.
You don't even meet the Na'vi, right? It's kind of wild. They say, as far as the story is concerned, you're in a valley and the Na'vi are in some other valley neighboring. And this is just a valley that the humans get to enjoy and explore.
And if the Shaman of Song is in Avatar, I have no idea.
No, I don't think so. Is she?
The Shaman of Songs? No, the Shaman of Songs is not in the movie. However, it doesn't make any sense why they would make this new Ma-e-wa song without actually moving it into a movie as well. Like, this is not just Disney Park's originally recorded audio. This is probably going to be used in one of the future movies. Like, I'm sure the Shaman of Songs will have an impact in one of the next 30 sequels that he has planned for Avatar.
Or, well, Terminator 5, whichever comes first.
Yeah.
So the next movie is apparently going to take place in a water-based environment. On Flight of Passage, we encounter a few different water-based creatures
that were not seen before.
That were never seen before. So maybe that's a foreshadowing for Avatar 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. But beyond that, there's nothing in the land that would suggest, hey, this is where 2 is going or this is where subsequent movies are going. So I don't think that the land does a good job of creating itself in a space that doesn't rely on the movies. Whereas with Star Wars, it does, right? Star Wars is going to take place in a certain time frame. You're going to see the Millennium Falcon with a certain, you know,
yeah. So radar dish. I mean, for the three people out there who saw Solo in the theaters, you saw the Millennium Falcon in its original state and how it lost the escape pod and the antenna and all that. If you've seen any of the recent aerials posted by people on Disney Twitter, you're going to see that there is a different satellite dish installed on top of the Falcon now.
So it does take place in a certain time, whereas Pandora would.
Yeah, Pandora has been said it takes place 50 years after the final Avatar movies released. Now, James Cameron can be going and he can put himself into a robot and for the next 1,000 years can keep releasing Avatar movies. But this will still happen 50 years after the last Avatar movie happens. And they have stuck to that quote.
And so Pandora has a place in the movie timeline. Star Wars has a place in the movie timeline. Toy Story Land, where does that fit in the movie timeline?
All of your favorite Toy Story characters are there. And you just don't care.
I hate all of you.
It's the opposite of Pandora.
Nobody cares because it makes no sense. Actually, this is probably just a me thing. So Toy Story Land makes no sense in any correlation to any timeline that exists in the Toy Story universe whatsoever. You enter this land and you see these characters from Toy Story 3, such as Trixie and Prickle Pants and Lotso. They have references in Toy Story Land. You see them in Midway Mania as well. Buzz does this entire Spanish spiel. According to the timeline of Toy Story Land, they say that this is Andy's backyard, which makes no sense that these characters and toys would be interacting with Woody and Jesse and such, because at this point, Andy's gone to college when the characters meet these other toys in Bonnie.
You just see advertisements for Mr. Prickle Pants.
You see his book. You see, but Trixie actually exists in Midway Mania.
Which one is Trixie?
Trixie is the dinosaur.
The Triceratops.
The Triceratops. With Rex.
Of course.
So Trixie's in there.
But she's on the screen?
She's on the screen. She mm-hmm. talks. It's throw your dino darts. It's really fun.
Yeah, but she could appear on the screen and it could still be whatever time it
is. She's on the screen. She's interacting with Rex. So the two dinosaurs, they clearly have this correlation. They know each other.
But that's happening in real time as you're there, even though it's on the screen.
Yes. So this is in real time. You are below Andy's bed in his room participating in Midway Mania. And the characters are running these game sets that are happening.
And what year would you say this is?
Well, and so that's the problem, right? Is that these other lands are constructed around a timeline because people care enough to do that, whether it's the Lucasfilm story group or whether it's James Cameron, Joe Rohde, they care enough. That care wasn't placed in Toy Story, presumably, if we're going to put a lot of emphasis on this, the storyline, the backstory of the land itself.
There's no time and there's no care, and this is obvious by all these characters interacting to each other. They can easily just fix it by saying it's Bonnie's backyard. That would solve every issue with this land.
But it wouldn't bring people into the land.
No, it wouldn't. But it would make me sleep at night.
And so does all of this have any impact or significance whatsoever to the average guest who's coming down here and saying, you know what, maybe I'm not going to schedule my vacation around Toy Story Land, whereas 2 years ago or a year ago, I absolutely did schedule it around Pandora.
The average guest wants to see Buzz Lightyear. They want to see Sheriff Woody. They want to see Jesse. They want to see these characters, and that's what they have the emotional connection to. They don't care about the land or the rides or anything else, as obvious by it's Buzz Lightyear in Magic Kingdom. It's a fun ride, but at the end of the ride, it's like, okay, cool, awesome. We saw Buzz Lightyear. They don't care about what attractions there are. It's more just seeing the characters that they grew up with, that they have an emotional attachment to. There is none of that with Avatar.
But yet it's a huge success as far as a theme park is concerned.
Yeah, people are going to be looking back at this in 50 years and being like, why did this work? Who would have thought?
I don't get it.
Why did it work, Josh?
I don't get it. I have no idea why Pandora works so well. People are willing to wait 3 hours for Flight of Passage.
People see a 3-hour line and still get in line.
Oh, yeah.
They stand there. It's pouring down rain. The real feel is still 100 degrees. They come off that ride and they still say that was worth it. I guess it's just a testament to the quality of the land. Quality wins out, as they say. But I also really enjoy Slinky Dog Dash. And I think most people that ride it really love it.
I think it's a lot better than what I had anticipated, just seeing, you know, taking construction photos and stuff like that. It ended up being a much better ride than I had anticipated.
It's fun.
It's a really fun ride. And Swirling Saucers is maybe not really fun, but it's fun.
But so we're all saying, yeah, Slinky Dog, it's a really fun ride. It's fun. But we're not saying you have to ride Slinky Dog next time you go to Walt Disney World.
You can see all of Slinky Dog as you walk into the land. You enter Pandora and you can see, oh, this is where you get on River Journey and this is where you get on Flight of Passage. You can't see inside. Everything is a total mystery, what you were waiting for. And that just adds to the mystery and suspense of what these attractions are and how they pull and garner the weight. Like, I can look at Slinky Dog and be like, yeah, I'd love to feel the track and sit on Slinky, but I doubt it's that. I don't need to experience the attraction. I can look at it from the side and be like, oh, that's cute.
So is the answer to all of our perplexion with regards to how Pandora is doing so well, is it word of mouth? Is it just people saying, yeah, you have to get on Flight of Passage to all their friends?
If you go outside and your neighbor Dave is like, yeah, man, Pandora. Like, you just smile and say, thanks, Dave. Don't speak to me anymore. So I don't know.
Well, inversely, look at the people mover at Magic Kingdom. So the people mover, when I first moved down here in 2011, there was never a line above 15 minutes for it.
Oh, you want to talk about Fast Pass Plus?
The impact of that.
Would you like to discuss that?
I feel this is a special 3-hour edition podcast we need to release at one point. Is that the issue? Is Fast Pass Plus? Because I think it's word of mouth. I think it's enough people over the course of the past 10, 20 years going, I love the people mover. There's no Fast Pass for it. There's never a line. It's a great relaxing ride. You could rewrite it. And then all of a sudden, word gets out. And now we're at a point in 2019 where it constantly has a half hour plus wait for this stupid ride. It's fun, but it's not a half hour wait fun.
It's a trash ride, you're saying.
It's a trash ride.
It's the first time I've laughed since 2011.
So presumably the answer is word of mouth. And the word of mouth just isn't there for Toy Story Land.
The thing about Toy Story Land is that whatever you say about it, if you go into Toy Story Land at any time after 9:30, even at Rope Drop, if you look at the line for Slinky Dog at Rope Drop, it goes out of the land. Mm-hmm. That's how popular the ride is.
Rope Drop.
Yeah, if you go into Toy Story Land at noon, it's going to be swamped. Part of that is the fact that you have to go back the way you came, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's a dead end right now.
But I've also wondered if Toy Story Land's location also hurts it, because you have to specifically go all the way back there where there is nothing. Like, once you hit the old Great Movie Ride building, behind that, there isn't much of interest.
So I was there, I was actually rope dropping this morning, and during rope drop there.
And you're on a podcast. You're at Disney World today.
Yeah.
And also on a podcast.
Very busy.
Wow.
Very busy. But I was there this morning, and there are plenty of cast members who are out there during rope drop as a guest flow procedure to say Toy Story Land is this way, Toy Story Land is this way. And they'll direct you through the archway into the animation courtyard. And then you'll make your way past the Voyage of the Little Mermaid all the way back to Toy Story Land. And it's a very controlled, very obvious thing at Rope Drop. But like you're saying, during the middle of the day, all those guest flow cast members are gone. And there are more than a few guests saying, which way is Toy Story Land again? It's hidden back there.
It's a Hollywood Studios is deceptively confusing.
It is.
But at the same time, you have to purposefully go into Pandora. And until 11 a.m., there's only one way in and out of that land as well, because there's so many people in line for Flight of Passage that they don't let you leave that way because there's no room.
Yeah, because it backs out towards Africa, right?
Yeah.
And that entrance
across the bridge,
yeah,
and all the way around. So it's strange. It's because on one hand, Toy Story Mania wait times are down about 15%, 14.8% to be exact. And you could say that, well, people aren't interested in Toy Story Mania anymore because now they're in line for Slinky Dog. Now they're in mm-hmm. line for Alien Swirling Saucers. Mm-hmm. But you would think that the land would be bringing in so many more people to overcome that. And also, potentially, that people aren't willing to wait 45 minutes for Toy Story Mania anymore. Because that's part of it, too. There's all those people you see outside Toy Story Land are looking at the wait times, and they're saying, I'm not willing to wait that long
yeah.
to get in line.
So here's another question. Toy Story opened last summer, right? June 2018.
May 30th. Was it June 30th?
June 30th, 2018. Pandora was May of 2017. Was Pandora positioned? Basically what I'm getting at is, does this all come back to Star Wars Land? Was Pandora positioned far enough away from the opening of Star Wars Land that Star Wars didn't cannibalize trips that otherwise would have been made to Walt Disney World? If people are going every 2 or 3 years, was Pandora far enough away from Star Wars for people to say, okay, I'm going to do Pandora now, 2017, and then I'm going to wait until 2020 and then go back and do Star Wars, and we'll just kind of do Toy Story when we're there anyways?
Well, I think that's what has ended up happening. There's nothing making you do Toy Story Land today. Like, you'd probably not be able to argue that Flight of Passage is a cultural experience, but Slinky Dog Dash certainly is not. There's nothing that makes you have to do that ride today. Like, maybe Flight of Passage is, like, if your neighbor Dave, who you just blew off,
mm-hmm. yeah,
when you get back from Disney World, is going to ask you, how was Flight of Passage? And you're not going to tell Dave that you didn't do it.
Right.
Because you know you're better than Dave. Even if you don't want to talk to him, you still have to feel better than him.
Of course.
So you have to go on Flight of Passage, even if it means the 3-hour wait. And neither of you went on Slinky Dog Dash because the wait was too long.
So then if we've seen ride wait times go up across the board at Animal Kingdom after the introduction of Pandora, we will see that same effect after the opening of Star Wars Land at Hollywood Studios, right? So if you want to ride Slinky Dog Dash or Alien Swirling Saucers or even Tower of Terror with lower weights, now is the time to do it. Whereas even 2 years after the land opening, we're going to see higher weights, presumably, for Slinky Dog Dash than we saw within the first year of it opening, or year and a half.
So you think it's going to have the Animal Kingdom effect?
Where I think Star Wars Land, well, that's the question I'm mm-hmm. posing. Will Star Wars Land have the Pandora effect that it did at Animal Kingdom, where we saw everything go up across the board, and we're going to see Slinky Dog and we're going to see Alien Swirling Saucers become far more popular if wait times are to be the, you know, determining factor as if something's popular or not? We're going to see those become far more popular once Star Wars Land opens, because then all the guests that didn't come in the first year and a half are going to be there for their 2020, 2021 visits.
Yes.
Yeah,
I agree. Which is probably a big reason why they're refurbishing Tower of Terror, because they know they're going to need that at full capacity once Star Wars opens this fall, and they know that it's got a lot of issues. We haven't talked about it. They're refurbishing half of Tower of Terror at a time at the moment. So it's running as well as it can come this fall.
It just needs a new set of paint. They need to fix some of the effects on the fifth dimension area. I mean, it'll look good when it's all done. But
maybe make it so half of it doesn't mechanically fail half the days of the year. I don't know. I'm not an expert.
I don't think you understand.
He brought his external hard drive here if you want to see the wait times for the past 8 years.
How bad has the Waits Bend Center been doing this all, though?
They actually haven't shut it down yet.
They haven't?
Okay.
No, they haven't.
Because, I mean,
we're still waiting.
They didn't say now. They said spring through summer, right?
Yeah. So. Supposedly, internally.
Yeah.
They said that it was supposed to start, I think, on the 18th, but they've been
of
running
February.
It. February. And it hasn't shut down, at least most of the day yet.
Okay.
So the jury is out. But especially if, as we expect, all of Galaxy's Edge is going to exit through Toy Story Land, which seems like an impossibility to me, considering how busy it is today.
So, yeah. So, but give me your thoughts on where the exit will be.
They say it's going to be Toy Story Land. You have to think they're going to funnel people through the old Pixar place.
Right.
Where they're doing the Munisaberg Incredibles thing. Incredibles will close, and then they'll somehow, probably easily, if they can exit through Toy Story Land, they can exit through Pixar Place.
So there is a backstage road that basically, if you're walking out of Star Wars Land, you'd walk straight to go into Toy Story Land. And then there's a backstage access road that if you walk right, I don't know, 200 feet, 300 feet, then you'll eventually meet up with the Pixar Place area.
Well, they're going to have to send people through there.
Absolutely. I think so.
Although, and this will be a great episode, nobody's going to leave Galaxy's Edge.
No, we're going to have to podcast directly from Uga's Cantina.
Nobody's going to leave. It's the same problem Disney has, and this is off topic, but one of the reasons why wait times are so long at Mickey's Halloween party is because waits are so long. If you wait 2 hours to meet the seven dwarfs, you're going to spend 5 minutes meeting the seven dwarfs. So if you wait 3 hours to get in Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, you are not leaving Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. Disney is going to have to give you a good reason to leave, especially if they're offering a bunch of interactive activities and a bunch of things to see. Nobody's going to leave.
So we saw that a little bit with Pandora opening, right? Where there were phased entries into the land for the first, I don't know, was it first week or two?
First couple of days.
Yeah, okay, first couple of days where, but obviously it's going to be on a much larger scale with Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. But we saw where people would kind of linger in the land and maybe not leave as much, but there's no interactivity in Pandora.
There's the only thing that's interactive in Pandora are these four noise holes. I'm not even joking here. There are four different holes along the mother route, they call them, near the One Wilderness Explorer's position. And you put your hand up to these honeycombs or whatever they are. There's purple like goo on them. And you prep a sensor and the little bugs up the mother route start hissing and growling at you. Like, this isn't even a joke. This is a real thing. They take it so seriously in Pandora and Avatar. It's such a serious topic there that you can't have a smile or laugh or fun. It's so dull and boring. Star Wars is not...
Are you talking about my blog?
Star Wars is not dull and boring. They're going to need to bring in a lot of the humor of the old
movies. Did you
movies.
See episode 8?
Want to talk about the casino scene?
That's two laughs. 2011.
But there's humor. There's subtle humor. There's great moments. Yes, Star Wars is a very serious topic. It's this really crazy concept and story. But there's these moments of humor and moments of fun. And they'll need to capture this in the land. And if they don't, it's going to be a dull, boring experience like Pandora. It's so...
Pandora is a dull, boring experience. It's a trash park.
Outside of the attractions.
Outside of the attractions, it is.
Certainly. Let me rephrase that.
Certainly.
It is. They want you to have a moment and be emotional and experience this land. It is not like Cars Land at California Adventure, where it's like, for Halloween, we dressed up the redneck tow truck as a vampire.
Three laughs.
It's good, though, right? So, yeah.
It's not like we're selling things in cone-shaped things because it's the cozy cone, which is themed to traffic cones, and we're doing... this, because no, Cars Land doesn't take itself seriously, which is part of why it appeals so much, is because sure, Cars is not a great movie, but it's okay, it's fun, whatever, it's punny. Cars Land takes the puns and runs with it, and then Avatar is like, I need you to feel the plants,
and which you have done.
You haven't.
But and then Star Wars will be somewhere in between, right?
I hope so.
Yeah,
it needs to be. I'm not expecting like Darth Vader helmets full of popcorn, but I'm expecting maybe like some space worm slug goo drink.
Yeah, if we're lucky.
There's going to be some fun elements for Star Wars Land, surely.
Yeah, such as the wait. Do you go to the Valley of Moara? maybe as our listeners know, the Valley of Moara is the walkway between the two attractions in Pandora. Is that in Avatar the movie?
No.
No. The Valley of Moara is this entire separate being.
So it's its own thing, much like a Batuu is going to be its own thing in Star Wars, which is interesting too, I think, that they didn't decide to build it based on Hoth or Tatooine or Dagobah or what have you. They decided, and maybe we'll see Batuu in the next movie.
So,
but Batuu was also mentioned already in Solo.
Black Spire Outpost was mentioned in Solo.
Sorry, yeah.
There's a Black Spire Outpost mentioned.
Well, Black Spire Outpost is the village within the Batuu.
The planet of Batuu, this is the village. So it's basically saying like Sydney on Earth.
We could have gone with New York City.
Yeah, that would work too, but I mean...
Yeah, no.
Like 1212 Wallaby Way is what you're saying. Yeah.
But the official line on that is that Disney and Lucasfilm don't want you to live somebody else's Star Wars story, like Skywalker or like any other of the characters. I'm sure there are more than just Luke Skywalker.
I don't know. I haven't honestly seen.
But they want you to live your own story,
via the Play app.
Via the Play app.
Sure.
Yeah. You're living. That'll be when fuel rods are no longer free swaps. When Star Wars
got credits. Opens,
8 credits for a swap. So that's the official line, is they want you to live your own story.
Which is awesome, because I personally feel that Star Wars works best when it's not dealing with the Skywalker family. Mm-hmm. I thought that Rogue One and Solo were two of the best Star Wars movies out there. Absolutely. I think Rogue One's my top.
Avatar.
Me? I never saw that crap movie.
Okay.
Get out of here. Please. I want to watch good movies.
I wonder if in the back of people's minds, did you see Mike Avatar in the theater in 3D?
No. No. I saw it on a plane on my way to Shanghai.
Shanghai. Thought we weren't going to.
I saw it on a plane on my way to Tokyo Disney Sea. I love Tokyo Disney Sea.
So maybe this is a bad point to make in a room full of people that didn't see Avatar. But I did see Avatar in 3D with the other $600 million worth of tickets they sold domestically. And it was an awesome experience at that time. And
because of the 3D?
Because of the 3D. It was a revolutionary movie. Very quickly, my opinion on Avatar is that it is Pocahontas in space. Yeah. But Avatar was visually so stunning that if you were trying to piece together like a True Detective-esque plot, that it would have detracted from the spectacle of the movie itself. Like, James Cameron is capable of telling an amazing story, but he knew that if he had layered it so much, it would have potentially taken away from this awe-inspiring, really amazing experience that was seeing that movie in IMAX 3D. But I can't talk to you guys about that since you didn't experience that yourself.
So you're saying that the movie succeeded because there wasn't a deep story.
Right.
But it was visually stunning. So how did they make Avatar 2 or 3 succeed?
I would guess the story is going to be a lot more in depth, a lot more layered. But we'll see.
So it comes down to it. Pandora succeeded. It's the little land that could.
The billion dollar
little
small lands. Investment that ended up working out.
The mom and pop company made this.
Mm-hmm. Small media companies.
It was a huge risk, a huge investment, and it paid off. Toy Story Land, the characters, everything about it felt like this it can't go wrong type scenario. And the boat they're in now is a interesting wire wait time down across the park. Star Wars is going to add another wrench into this, and we'll tackle that bridge when we get to it later this year. Signing off for the night, this is Brett Schmoofy on Twitter.
Josh from EZWW.com.
And Mike from BlogMickey.com.
Thanks for listening. Have a great night.